Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com Crowd Forecast News, episode number 248 for December 9th, 2019. We are recording at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and today we will be discussing the 324th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can download either the PDF version or access the web version there if you want. Just a reminder, too, that you can, in addition to posting the recordings of all the shows on YouTube, I also host the audio-only podcast version on all the different podcast directories and apps. So be sure to search for Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast app and subscribe there. Today, I have arranged for Dan Passarelli to join us. He's been on the show a few times, but it's been a while, so great to have Dan back. And Mike Bassani also back, and Jim Kenny is moderating. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Thanks a lot, David, and welcome everybody. This is going to be a great show. We got two great guests, and the markets certainly are at a very key area here, very close to the all-time high, and basically trying to figure out which way it wants to go from here. Today we have Mike Bassani and Dan Passarelli, and before we get into the questions and all that, just going to let these guys introduce themselves and explain a little bit about what they're doing down at their companies. We're going to start out with Dan Passarelli. Dan, could you a little background on yourself and what you guys are doing?
Yeah, sure thing, Jim. Yeah, so once again, my name's Dan Passarelli. I started down in this business back in 1993, knocking on doors at the Chicago Board of Trade building, got a job down on the trading floor, started at the bottom and worked my way up to be one of the biggest traders in my pit at one point. Subsequently wrote a couple books on option trading. Trading Option Greeks is the one that most people know about, also the Market Taker's Edge. And now I run Market Taker Mentoring, which is the leading options education firm globally.
Sounds great, Dan. And we'll get into more at the end of the broadcast of how people get a hold of you and get more information. Right now, we're turning over to Mike Bassani. Mike's been here many times, smartoptiontrading.com. What do you got to say today, Mike?
Hey, Jim. Nice to be back. You too. Nice to meet you, Dan. I started trading just after the financial crash. I made my first trades. I remember I was in Starbucks and GM and Ford and some banks. Some worked. Others like GM went to zero. Quickly made my way into options, found leverage, and kind of learned the hard way. I made a lot of money, lost a lot of money before I figured out you had to change with the market. And now what I do is I look at the technical analysis and I use option flow to help me decide what trades I want. You know, and sometimes it works great and sometimes it doesn't, but the technicals help give me a better feel for the stock and what's going on, and really have learned how to read options flow over the years and really determine, you know, what looks good and what doesn't, what's being bought, what's being sold. You know, sometimes these guys are selling their stock and buying cheap calls to get people to chase it up. And for me, that's what I try to do. I try to focus on that. And I've been trading now full time for about 6 years.
Great. All right, you guys. So we're going to start in with the questions that we ask each and every week. And the first one is the S&P opened today at 3141 on the SPX. And we'd like to have an idea of what you guys think the Friday close will be, higher or lower. And then we'll get into other questions. But right now, just will we get higher or lower? And we'll stay in the same order. Dan, how do you feel about between now and Friday?
Yeah, boy, I will tell you what, it's a tough one. I expect, what I actually expect is a little bit of choppiness. But, you know, as they say, gun to my head, I got to pick one. I'm going to go with higher.
Okay. And Mike, what's your gut feeling between now and Friday? We've obviously had pretty good momentum. Maybe you could say it stalled a little bit here, but how are you feeling between now and Friday?
Friday I told all my subs, I thought this was going to be a tough, tough week with everything going on. I still think the market puts a new all-time high in this year, but gun to head this week with everything taking place, I'm going to go lower.
Okay. All right.
But so not we got big. A little,
yeah, not big. And I think obviously the way the market's trading and with the things on the horizon, it could be very binary, right? You know, the way it works out.
I mean, there's no volume today, Jim. I mean, look at the volume today. We're at, yeah, what, 13 million shares for almost 3.5 hours in.
You can't blame them. You got a Fed meeting and you got a ECB meeting and you also have got the December 15th tariffs. So I don't know if I'd want to.
And the England elections.
And the English elections, which seemed like a pretty much of a gimme that Boris is going to win them. And that's why that British pound's going nuts today on the upside.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go to confidence level. Dan, your confidence level that we might be higher by the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm going to go with about 51%.
The preponderance of the evidence, but not much preponderance, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, if you look back, I mean, I'm a little bit of a pattern observation sort of guy, probably from being in music a fair part of my life. But, you know, you look back and you see periods where the market trends up, and then just hits this choppy period for, you know, maybe seven sessions or something. And that's where we live right now. So it's really tough, you know, it's a really tough call. It's almost a coin flip, but, you know, since I put myself out there and did say higher, I've got to say at least above 50.
Yeah, that music analogy is really interesting because the music of the market has clearly been to the upside, and you probably don't see any instruments coming in to change the music right now, huh?
Yeah, no, those contrabassoons and
I think that, to be honest with you, I think that would be very helpful to have a music background, because there is a rhythm to the market, and, you know, when a song is being sung, you know, to bet that the song's going to change in a totally different direction is sometimes obviously not very realistic, right?
Yeah, right.
They're not going to turn My Way into AC/DC, you know, Barbra Streisand into AC/DC in the middle of the song, right?
No, but Sid Vicious did do a pretty cool cover of that.
All right, Mike, what's your story as far as confidence level?
I'm kind of with Dan here. I'm going to have to say above 50%, but don't really want to. You know, I'm going to say 60%, and it really comes down to Friday. I mean, you got a ton of shorts. We'll talk about this more, trapped in this market from last week. But if it doesn't look like there's a deal in place or tariffs are going to go in place on Friday, I suspect we get some selling pressure ahead of the weekend.
Yeah, a little bit of hedging or profit taking. And there got to be a lot of fund managers who are sitting on gains, and, you know, they may want to try to make sure they get those pays, right?
I think we saw a lot of that last week, to be honest with you. I mean, if you look what happened last week, it wasn't really a sell-off. It just seemed like a lot of profit taking.
Exactly. And then they definitely trapped some people in things like JP Morgan, and then they slammed it right to new highs.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, the last part of this is reasoning. If you were going to put a base case, Dan, on why we would be going higher, what are some of the bullet points?
Purely fundamental driven. just the actions by the Fed, you know, I mean, we went through a long period where the Fed basically supported the market, really from 2008 to 2017. I mean, that was, I would say, highly influenced by the Fed's actions. And then the Fed sort of backed off on that, and now the Fed is sort of back on that, and that's why we saw the big recent climb. And I don't really see I don't see anything changing based on rhetoric I've heard recently.
Yeah, obviously with a window of between now and Friday, it's obviously a different scenario than what's the overall market looking like, because the liquidity that's been thrown at the markets has been very, very high. You know, the Fed's easing, the ECB's easing. You know, we've got all kinds of buybacks of the stocks going on, so it's hard to fight a that has that kind of liquidity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, what's behind the curtain for you, Mike, as far as we might have a little bit of a dip this week?
I think first thing starts with the Fed, Jim. I think you guys pointed it out. But, you know, the market's sitting here for all intents and purposes at all-time highs here, right? So there's no reason for them to be any kind of dovish, I think, on this Fed meeting. They're not going to cut. It's not expected. And I wouldn't be surprised if Powell in his press conference was more hawkish than he's been the last couple. So that's your first little hit that may come. And then it really just comes down to, you know, last week, China and the United States started jawing at each other through social media again, right? And they've been doing that, and that's kind of continuing here. And I suspect the closer we get to Friday, if there's nothing going on and there's no deal being reached, that we could see that kind of pick up and tick up a bit with Trump threatening tariffs. At the end of the day, gun to my head, I do believe he punts and kicks the can down the curb for another month or so on it. But going into Friday and Friday night, I believe he'll keep the pressure on to the end. And that's my reasoning behind it.
Yeah. And then he may say we're deferring them into for another month to see if we can get something just to get it through the holiday thing.
Exactly. Because he doesn't, you know, remember also, this is a man that, you know, he bases his presidency on the markets. He's in battle with his impeachment hearing coming up. Yeah. I don't see him letting this go too far.
Yeah. He doesn't need a stock market correction of 20% while they're trying to impeach him.
No. But this week could be a little tough. And then we set up nicely, I think, for the year end.
Yeah. All right. And Dan, you know, some of the things that you look at when you are looking at, you know, technical indicators on, you know, what would, encourage you to do a trade? What are some of the technical indicators or any indicators that might influence your thinking?
There's a good handful that I look at depending on exactly what sort of trade I'm looking at. I mean, I'm a very big believer that you've got to have some versatility and flexibility and make a variety of different option strategies as trades. or at least be good at a handful. So there are different things that I look at, but I will tell you, I would say 90% of what I rely on is, and this is going to be really boring to a lot of people, good old fashioned horizontal support and resistance lines. There are many other indicators that I look at, ADX and RSI. I like slow stochastics. I like a lot of other things, but those are just sort of, manipulations of previous data to help you see things a little bit more clearly. You know, they're very, very useful for what they do, but support and resistance lines are really a map of human behavior. I mean, that tells you where the buy orders were in the past, because that's why the market bounces, where the sell orders were in the past, because that's why the market, you know, hits a high and then backs off. So to me, that's the most useful thing. Totally not sexy. Maybe you're expecting something with a really fancy name, you know, but
or something from the 6th century, like Fibonacci or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Or but, something, you know, from Japan, like the candlestick charts or something. And now we've got the Okeechobee Cloud or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's if you've been around long enough, you see there's a proliferation of different ways to analyze it. There's no doubt about it. But like you're saying, at the end of the day, at what level were people buying, and at what level do people seem to be willing to give it up? And those are factual levels. Now, of course, you know, they may change, but it does give you a history of levels of where buying and selling has occurred.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the other things you're mentioning could add salt and pepper to what you're seeing. Like if you start seeing RSI rising as it bounces off a support line, you probably find that encouraging, that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that can help me set levels for things like put credit spreads, or, you know, maybe under some circumstances, especially if there's like an average crossover, one of the particular ones I look for, you know, like that could help me choose momentum play, like simply buying a call or something. So there's definitely a whole bunch of useful tools in the toolbox, as they say, but you know, I like to go with the tried and true for what I rely most heavily upon.
And what instruments do you tend to gravitate to? Individual issues, the indexes, commodities?
Well, I like to say, give me an EKG chart and I'll trade it. But typically, I do a lot of, as far as like my longer term investing goes, like SPX. Is something that I'm in every single day. And then everything else is sort of opportunistic. When I find something, I sort of attack it. I kind of approach with that hunter mentality, I guess.
Do you go after different sectors?
You know, I have not really made a habit of that. To be honest, I think there is a whole lot of value in that. And some people who do focus on that, I think, can have a little bit of an edge. But it's not something that I've really focused that much on, though I do have respect for it.
Yeah. The idea of rising tide lifts all boats, or if there's a tsunami, all the boats are going down. All right. Well, Mike, any particular technical indicators that you're kind of keeping an eye on when you try to come to a conclusion?
You know, I think it's a great question. For me, it kind of all comes down to putting all the pieces of the pie together. So one of my big things I like to look at is sentiment, like to put the call and see how hot, or, you know, are we running too bearish or too bullish on the overall markets to tell me, to guide me. And then look at the heat level of the markets. You know, last weekend when the RSI, we came into last week, was screaming on the SPY, to me that was a time to be careful, because some names can stay hot in RSI, others can't. And the ETFs generally don't. ETFs generally, when they get over 70, they generally like to come in. And then I think Dan brought up a great one, is volume. You know, volume tells me everything. And today's volume is telling me, you know, be extra careful, stay out of stuff. You know, look for other trades, look for things that are acting better, look for names that are acting stronger in today's market. Today, for example, early on, you had names like Nvidia popped, and Microsoft, and they wrote, and Shop, and Roku, and they all have better volume, average, above average volume in them. And the Bollinger Bands too, I like to use. When something runs into the top of the Bollinger Band, I'm usually much more careful about chasing it up there. I'd rather let it come back and realign with the moving averages, like the 8-day, the fast ones. And finally, it's option flow, Jim. That's the final piece for me. When I have a technical setup I like and there's option flow in it, you know, that means giddy up, get in on. When there's option flow and there's no technical setup, I'm a little bit more careful with it. And, you know, that's basically how I trade. I look for the setups I like. I do charts every Sunday. I put together my plan for the week and, you know, go from there. And then when it's starts going up, I take profits. So last week I got in Target at 124.50. I sold half my position at 126.50 today, and I'm waiting for the rest to see if it can take out 128 after a nice move here today.
A lot of most times, are you trying to basically scalp out, $2 to $5 out of these things?
You know, I will scalp out 30 to 40 cents on the right stock with 1,000 shares if I can.
I got you.
Just put money in my pocket and get out.
Scalping would be swing would be the thing that you're trying to do.
You know, I prefer to swing. This market has been a little tough on swingers lately. No pun intended. It's just, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence. This market's been very hard to find confidence lately. And the, you know, names like Facebook, like to me, have become untradeable because it pops and dips all the time. And then a day like today, it suddenly shoots up and just keeps going. And so you tend to look at things, and volume really is important in this market. If you don't have volume, you look at those first couple of 5 or 10 or 15 minute candles and the volume is not there, it's hard to trust the moves.
Yeah. And would you say it's a little bit safe to say that, you know, you're looking to take some risk when you buy or sell things, but the quicker you can get out of the risk and grab your money, the better you feel?
Right now, yeah. Right now, this market's been like that for most of this year. The faster I can put money in the pocket, the happier I am. That said, I would love to, you know, I was hoping last week we're going to get a bigger dip than we got, Jim. Perfectly honest with you, I was hoping we'd test the 50-day in the SPY. And this market, you know, I keep telling everybody, it's very bulled up here. It's more afraid of missing out on the move than getting caught in it. And you just have to respect that action and be careful shorting.
Yeah, because, well, again, the liquidity factor. You know, again, the Fed's putting $60 billion in the short end to keep money market rates way down. That's making people, you know, get out of it. And you got the buybacks by these companies, which is not chump change by any means. And some people are saying there's got to be a pretty good run of that maybe by the end of the year. So liquidity, you know, when the market has a lot of liquidity, it certainly can do well, which is what we've seen, right?
You know, they don't want to call it QE, but what the Fed's been doing with that repos is exactly it, right?
Right.
Yeah, just dumping money into it over and over again. I mean, you don't fight the Fed, right? They continue to have it back, and the repos are supposed to go now into February, I believe, last we heard.
Now, Dan, I'm going to switch over to you and ask you something about the SPX, because it's something you follow, and it's questions that I have, which probably, hopefully, the audience may have as well. Last week's high, I guess, or the week before's high, was 31.54 on SPX. Forget about the change. And we did go up toward that, and then we backed off. And then today we were up to 31.48, and now it's backing off a little bit. Is it too early to call 31.55 a resistance level because there's not enough price evidence to make that statement? Or what do you think?
Yes and no. I mean, we can definitely call it a sort of a mild resistance level because I think there's always a lot of psychological pressure when there's the prospect of making a new high. But I sure wouldn't call it really a proper resistance level. I like to see it bounce off a point two or three times, ideally. And just with my expectations for sort of a rather choppy week, having some ups and downs here or there, I'm really not ready to say, that's the resistance level.
Yeah, there's not enough water under the bridge.
Totally.
There are some gaps underneath, though. I'm noticing on my 10-day graph that 31.20 to about 31.35 is a gap. And then there's a bit of a gap between about 30.95 and 31.05 or something. Do you view those as a factor when you're looking at this stuff?
Yes, I do. And that's been kind of on my mind a little bit as well. I highly expect those gaps to be filled at some point. Whether, you know, some of the chop this week just, you know, takes out the nearest one, or maybe we end up getting sort of a rounded top and we get a little bit of a pullback going into the end of the year, which is probably probably not a likely scenario. You know, there's evidence for the Santa Claus rally and such, but I always observe gaps. To be honest, I don't know why they work, but they just seem to work.
Yeah, well, maybe it's an order imbalance that gets settled back in, kind of like yields on the 10-year going all the way down to 140. Mm-hmm. You know, snapping back to 2 is really just, that order imbalance is off the table now, and now the market goes back to a more nominal level.
Yeah.
Because it is, like Mike was saying, volume is very important. You know, if you see a huge move up and a tremendous amount of volume, that's lovely, but, you know, obviously, if that volume is not repeatable, the market may have a hard time sustaining that level that it hit. Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes you'll see a big run-up on big volume and then a drop on lower volume, or vice versa, a big sell-off on huge volume and then a snapback rally on lower volume.
Yeah, it's about that conviction, you know?
Yeah. Well, Mike, when you're doing the options at all, do you ever use them for hedging purposes? Because I know you do a lot of options, or are you just basically taking it as positions type thing?
When I'm worried about the markets, but I still want to stay long-minded, find it, I'll sometimes take a hedge, and I'll use, I like using the VXX for that.
Okay.
I like to trade the VXX. It trades very well.
Well, it's got a heck of a lot of volume. It goes like 33 million shares a day. I mean, that is like so ridiculously large.
Well, exactly. It's liquid and it has an underlying, right? It has, it, you know, unlike the VIX, which has no underlying, right? There's nothing there. The VXX is an ETF. So that's why I trade that. I love using that as a hedge against things. I'll buy that. I'll trade that when the market, you know, some people are great at shorting. I'm not the best short in the world. I'm long-minded. So play to your strengths. So when the market gets weak, I tend to run to the VXX or SQQ and play the inverse ETFs to the long side. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In other words, if there's a big drop, you'd be looking at doing something with puts or something on the VXX.
Well, I would be looking at the VXX long if the market drops. So I tend to go
I mean, at this point, if you think there's going to be a correction, the VXX on the long side would be the way to look. Today, it's up about 3%. So obviously, there's more than a couple of people thinking that.
Well, today was weird because you have a little bit of a divergence. The VIX was elevated. The VIX was at highs and the SPY was at highs. And when I see that, it always gives me, you know, take a second, take a step back. These are supposed to be running opposite of each other, not together. So when you see that, normally one's going to turn around and reverse. And today it was the SPY.
Right. And looking at the VXX now, the 52-week low is 16.10. It's currently at 17.23. Now, I'm not an expert at the VXX, but I had heard that, you know, one of the disclosures on it is that it doesn't have any actual stock in it. It's a security they created. And so can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. So you don't want to sit in this thing.
Right.
So this is while it's not leveraged like the UVXY, it is a artificially created ETF.
I guess that's what they're saying when they say it's a security, but it doesn't have any actual stocks in it.
Right. Because it's trading off futures right on the VIX.
Okay.
And in contracts. So it does decay, not as fast as the leveraged ones, but it does have decay. That's why you constantly see them reverse splitting it to get it back up. And you can see it went all the way to 16.10 where, you know, it moves faster and bigger than the VIX, but it also decays. So if you sit in this, if you buy 1,000 shares and the VIX does nothing for 3 weeks, this will be lower.
Okay. Because of its linked to the futures a little bit.
Right. Which are decaying, right? Everything's heading to zero.
They have contango in it.
Right.
I gotcha.
Right.
Yeah. Because like I say, I'm not an expert at this at all, but I do, you know, it's kind of like my speedometer. I don't know exactly how it works, but I know what 75 miles an hour is.
Yeah. So, you know, these things, I always say you don't take these things unless they're in play.
Right, right.
Or I'll use options long to hedge my overall portfolio, which I know are going to decay and go to zero, but it's a premium paid bet.
Right. And I was looking at the option or the detailed quote on it, and it doesn't have any short interest that it works with. Do most people actually trade the options on this, or the volume that I'm looking at is all actually buying the contracts?
I trade both the ETF, the VXX, and the options on it. Both work very well. They're both very liquid. And that's another thing I like about it. You have a ton of liquidity. In fact, if you were to look at the, you know, like you said, it trades 33 million shares a day, which means it's very, very liquid from trading it with common. The bid ask is usually a penny or two aside, which I like, right? If I'm going to take something with common. Mm-hmm. If you go out and look at the December expiration and you look at the volume and then the open interest that's out there, I mean, you have thousands and thousands of calls and puts in the open interest. You have plenty of liquidity there. You can trade this. You know, you have volume on all the strikes. This is very, very tradable venue on options or common. And a lot of them are not like that. So that's what I like about the VXX. That's why it's my favorite. That's why it's the one I go to.
So if people are long stocks and they're looking to do a hedge, some people would use this VXX as a hedge, knowing that if their stocks go in the tanker, this thing may benefit from that.
Yep. So like right now, if you thought for some reason we were going to dump into the end of the year instead of rally, and you wanted to try something, for me right now, I would go out and I would look at the January expiration. And honestly, I would look at something around the January 21 calls. They're trading around 74 to 75 cents. And, you know, that's a nice little hedge against your portfolio. They have a delta of 29 cents. That means for every buck the VXX moves, they'll move 29 cents to start. And that's a fairly inexpensive hedge you can go out there and take with plenty of time for it to weather prove out or not. And the beautiful thing about the options are you just close them.
Yeah. And if you go back for the last year, we had volatility in the May timeframe, and we had volatility in the August timeframe, and we had some volatility in the October timeframe. And you got some decent bounces out of it during all three. You got about a 10-point move almost in the May timeframe, and then you had about another 8-point move. So if there were volatility, you know, this could react to it.
You can. And just remember that the moves this year since the last December lows have been fast. They're in and out. They're not slow and hanging around. So I just, you know, for me, it's just a hedge right now unless the market dumps, if anything.
Hey, Dan, you know, the S&P obviously has been a big winner on the upside this year. And obviously there's been a proliferation of put selling and credit put spreads, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a level on the S&P where you would consider suspending that type of activity?
Well, I mean, I've already sort of cut back a little bit on positive deltas. But here's the thing. There was a study that I kind of oversaw a little bit. We actually had an intern many, many years ago when I was with the CBOE do a study on when stocks are at their all-time highs, what is the likelihood of them continuing higher or pulling back and going lower? And the punchline ended up being it's about a 51% chance of continuing higher. It's randomness adding in like the risk-free rate. So as much as it's sort of my nature to be a little bit contrarian with a lot of things, I mean, when things are at an all-time high, I just viscerally expect somewhat of a pullback. I know that that's not necessarily more likely to come to fruition than to see it keep going. So no, I mean, I guess not, you know, despite the fact that it sure makes sense. I mean, at some point, some things do reach all-time highs and they pull back. It's very, very, very difficult to predict when that is. We could have predicted that, you know, 2 months ago or something when they started talking about impeachment. We could have started thinking that when the Fed announced that they were, you know, going to stop cutting interest rates, when every time the China deal goes south. So it's very, very difficult to predict. So I try to, you know, I try to force myself not to think, okay, there has to be a pullback. I'm going to stop selling puts or put credit spreads.
Right. So basically, at this point in time, you know, it doesn't seem like a situation where if it broke 3070 or something like that, or 3000, those would be more significant breaks in this trend, I think, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Those round numbers are very strong psychological resistance points for sure. I think if we get when we get a bounce off of those sort of points, then you know, a pullback from those points, like there's an indication of, okay, we could have a little bit of a stronger pullback. But, you know, I mean, that's sort of a different answer to the question, you know. Yes, that's still more technical based.
Right. And of course, if you do get a correction for people who do want to participate in puts, obviously the premiums are bigger. So you can get better paid or move your strike prices even further away from reality, making them more difficult to reach.
Yes, right, which is great. I love getting those pullbacks to have those opportunities.
Yeah, because in this market, we haven't seen a whole lot of that as I look at the chart since the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Mike, with regards to, I didn't ask you, do you have certain sectors that you're kind of looking at from time to time? Because, you know, obviously medical devices and biotech and the banks have been on a pretty good roll. You know, obviously everything's been on a pretty good roll the way the market looks, but is there any certain sectors that you're kind of zeroed in on? It seems like you do follow the tech, you know, that's for sure.
Love tech. What's really kind of gotten my attention lately is the value plays. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that with names like, you know, I consider Apple more of a value play right now than a tech play. And we saw that huge run last week, Target, Starbucks coming back. Today, they've been buying calls all over the place on Corning and Kraft Heinz. So, you know, you continue to look at these value plays and they continue to come for it. And the one sector that really has my attention this week is energy with the Saudi Aramco IPO. They've been pumping crude and seeing a lot of energy names waking up here in the last 24 to 48 hours, the last couple of sessions. So keeping a close eye on those as well. But technically, the end of the year is typically very strong for tech. So I'm a little bit tech jaded right now, even though they've had that big run. So I'm really keeping a careful eye on the tech sector. Specifically, we have Avgo earnings this week. Does that get the semis, which have been kind of quiet for the last 3 weeks, does that wake them back up? You know, NVIDIA, AMD, already seeing Qualcomm starting to move out of this. So some really, you know, really like to see how this plays out once we get through this week. I really think this is just a tough week.
Yeah. And, you know, it is very interesting. The semis, SMH and the S&P, you know, have a little bit of a similar deal going on in that 3155 on the S&P has been an established high, albeit a very short-term one. And 135.26 has been an established high, albeit again, a short-term one on the SMH. And they both have gaps on underneath. So it'll be very interesting if A, news will hit the market to blow this thing out to new highs, blow out 3155 and blow out 135, or if in fact just a little bit of cold water would make these things roll over.
What's interesting to me is you talk about the SPY. This rally started back on October 10th, and then we gapped up on the 11th, and that day we trapped everybody short in this market. And, we did a very nice orderly step up. And last week's pullback, we created an island bottom, right? You have Tuesday's candle. We gapped down, then we gapped up. You trapped all the shorts in this market. The SMH looks identical to it. Spent 2 days playing around and then gapped up for Friday. And now you have a lot of shorts trapped in this market in the semis. And I think you're asking the question, Jim, are they going to let them off the hook, right? Mm-hmm. Are we going to go down and fill these gaps, or are we going to squeeze them at some point? And, you've seen a lot of flow. There's been some interesting flow in the options market today. You've seen a good amount of cheap put buying, but almost all in weeklies, and then some way out of the money call buying on some of on the indexes themselves. And boy, that just to me is really interesting. We saw the December 30th 322 calls hit hard, and I think you're seeing that the market is really more interested in going up than down. And the question to me is, do they fill these gaps and let the shorts out, or do we just kind of hold here and noodle around for the rest of the week?
Yeah, and again, another question would be, how many people want to fight the liquidity that's being put in by central banks? Because let's face it, they print money and they can keep printing money and they buy their own securities. And so between that and the corporations buying their own securities, the average Joe with his whatever volume he's got, he seems to be fighting two big entities, central banks and companies buying back their own stocks, which is, I guess, one of the reasons why we haven't been able to have a sustained drop all year.
I think that's really this big part of it. Although, it's interesting. The volume is all the open and the close right now. In the middle of the days are just very weird in this market. The algos break free and they just go running amok and try to stop everybody out. But, again, 315.48, the all-time high in the SPY. I really think 320 is in play by the end of the year, if not higher.
Yeah.
Get gut call, gun to head. I just think this market has too much, unless for some reason Trump really goes after China, and I just don't think it's going to happen. I really think there's just too much upward trajectory built into this market here. And we spent the last 18 months doing nothing and broke out in October. So we're just starting the next leg up of this bull trend, in my opinion.
There's some people who are saying that he feels like he has house money and that maybe he will be more tough now and take the dip that could happen and then maybe get a deal in March, April, which might be more closer to the election. Ergo, he could get a little bit more run for his money if things are looking bright and shiny, closer to when people go into the ballot box.
I hear him. I hear you saying that. And I can't disagree that he could do something like that. But he's got so much embattlement going on right now. If these markets dump 20%, he wouldn't look good. And again, he bases everything on this market. I really believe through the election next year, this market will stay elevated unless they actually do impeach him, which I really don't think it's ever getting through the Senate.
All right. Well, Dan, obviously people that own stock, they want it to keep going and they're complacent and they feel like very comfortable here. And they're going to hopefully see further gains. They had a very rough December last year where they lost 20% or more, and they've recovered that and basically moved higher. Albeit from the high of last year to the high of this year, it's not exactly as great a return as people talk about, because obviously, when you're down 25% or 20% and then you come back up, that's a 20% gain there. So the reality is really what, 29.50 to 31.50 has been the gain this year, high over high. But what levels underneath, because you are a support and resistance guy, levels underneath would tell you that Happy Days Are Here Again song might be changed?
Yeah. well, let's see here. I just want to give you a much more accurate answer than throwing out some words.
I'm sure the audience would like an accurate answer too.
Yeah. Thank you. So, yeah. So I go back and I look at the chart, right? And busting through the 21-day moving average was significant. I believe that's why we got some follow through yesterday. The no volume, very short range day today is telling us nothing really. We get some really, really big support at the 50-day moving average, 30.45. Like that is definitely a very key level. And right beneath that, 30.25-ish is another previous double top over the last 6 months.
Right.
So, I think it's unlikely we pull through the 50-day moving average, but there's not a whole bunch that would surprise me. this year or just anymore. I think if we do, there could be a little bit of follow through. The floor, though, I think would be 3,000. I think that that's psychological resistance point. I think we're going to see a lot of buy orders at that point.
Yeah. If and when something would occur. Do you guys have any feeling towards Tuesdays and Thursdays? Because sometimes they have been a little bit of reversal days. And obviously with this day that we're seeing here, will Tuesday and Thursday of this week possibly be the days where people make decisions, Mike?
I don't know if we're going to get a lot of decisions until after the Fed on Wednesday this week.
So Thursday could come into play pretty heavy for volatility.
Yeah, Thursday can come in. I always tell my subscribers, Mondays and Tuesdays tend to be option premium burn days in the market. They love to get people to chase with weekly options on the open and then just sit there and decay them out, right? Yank the name a little bit and just, but don't go anywhere. Just keep them in it enough so that the options just keep decaying. Remember, weekly options, theta decay is working so badly against you at that point. Mm-hmm. I don't read anything into today. I think, you know, tomorrow will be interesting. Right now, we're holding the gap up that we created on Friday on mm-hmm. the SPY. You know, as long as we hold that, we stay very bullish. It'd be interesting if they decide to go down there and fill that ahead of the Fed. Maybe a quick move down and then reverse back up off the, you're kind of between the 8 and the 21 day there.
And the ECB, are they meeting on Thursday or Tuesday?
I think that's Thursday morning.
So a lot of stuff is coming in later in the week. So there's not really too much that would stimulate things between today and tomorrow unless there was some kind of a tweet or something like that.
You know, I think we're in a very high tweet danger environment this week. You know,
and maybe because of that, you won't see any, you know what I mean?
Correct.
All right. As we're going to close into the end here, is there anything, Dan, a certain market or a certain strategy that you'd kind of like to explain to people that you think might be timely right now?
I think watching the things that are going on this week are going to be key. I think this is an important week. We went through a very, very long period where bad news was good news. The economy is doing poorly, so that means that the Fed will cut interest rates, so let's buy stocks, which is counterintuitive, but we lived in that world for a rather long time. That turned around at the last Fed meeting when the Fed basically said, yeah, well, we're not likely to be cutting rates anytime soon. And so that's why everything changed. That's why good news is good news now, because it eliminated the uncertainty, the guessing. Everybody knows the score. And so if the economy is doing great, that's something that can drive us forward. So that being said, because of the rhetoric that came out of the last Fed meeting, we've got to really, really scrutinize exactly what is said a Tuesday and Wednesday to see if there's any changes to the very specific rhetoric that came out last time. So, you know, that being said, it's key week. Let's pay close attention, and then we can kind of position ourselves through the rest of the year after that.
Yeah, the statement that the Fed makes will be very important for you to keep an eye on.
Very important.
Because again, 3.5 unemployment is a 1969 low. Seems like wages are picking up pretty good. Manufacturing, that was a GM deal though, right? The manufacturing jobs picked up huge, but I think that was because I think GM strike went, they got canceled or something.
Yeah.
So, but the unemployment report was extremely, strong. And the unemployment rate is extremely low. And consumer spending seems to be brisk, albeit a lot of it's on credit card. But, this is an environment where, they could come out with a little bit more of a moderate statement. And if they do that, that could be something that would affect the markets up here.
Yep.
Mike, as you're getting into the end of the week here, anything you're looking at as far as, timely things that you're focused on? One thing you did mention that I was going to bring up is a sleeping sector could be the energy, because it's something that I've been getting involved in for the last month or so. And it's certainly been a profitable area to be in. Is there more to come?
I'm watching it closely because it's been the laggard, right? For the last couple of years, it really just has not participated in this market. And in the last 2 months, we saw banks finally break out of their range. We saw the biotech finally get its pop, right? And right now we're sitting here, and energy is the only sector that really has not participated. And I own some rig. I'm underwater on it, and I'm not worried about it. And I've been looking to buy other stuff like Schlumberger, and COP is another favorite of mine that I love to trade. I just think this oil pump is artificial. That's the one thing I'm concerned about here, is that, Saudi wants to get oil as high as possible for their IPO so they can get as much money out of the Saudi Aramco IPO. And that's my one concern is once that comes out, you know, are we going to see everything just come crashing back down on it again? So that's the one thing I'm careful with. But if this sector was to catch on, it'd be a great area to rotate in. You know, it hasn't moved that far yet where it's not chaseable. The 200-day and the XLF is all the way up at 61.84. We're still trading under 60. So plenty of room for this sector to go. I like it. And just a note on the jobs report, you know, everybody keeps looking at the jobs report and this was fabulous. You know, aren't we kind of, everybody expects, you know, we're like, oh, growth is not as good as it was. Well, aren't we kind of nearing max employment? I mean, eventually jobs growth has to slow down, doesn't it?
I mean, you would think unless, you know, there's something inordinate happening out there, which, you know, with all the things going on in the world nowadays, is not off the table, you know.
So, but yeah, I'll be watching it.
Logically, yeah. A couple of stocks that people have been talking about in the energy sector. Halliburton had a pretty big day Friday. It's doing pretty good today. And USO had a pretty good day Friday. It's doing okay today. Are you looking at USO or Halliburton at all?
I tried Halliburton every once in a while. I prefer Schlumberger. I prefer COP. I like RIG. VLO used to be a favorite of mine. It's not participating in this rally, though it did. Although it moved when the energy was weak. This thing has been moving all year. So I've been keeping an eye on that. But the names I really like to trade are Schlumberger, RIG, and COP. Those are some of my favorites. ExxonMobil occasionally can be in play, but this has been a big-time laggard and is really not showing any particular leadership.
In the medical area, you know, people are concerned about the drug companies because of all the Washington banter, but they are making a point that the medical devices aren't really, you know, nobody's complaining about artificial knees or artificial hips, you know, but they are obviously complaining about a prescription drug problem. So they're finding that the medical device area is maybe a better place to go. Do you have any feeling on that?
Well, we saw Medco get bought now. We've seen some of these companies getting bought out and they seem to be stronger, but look at the small biotechs that have been fueling this market for the last month, you know, whether it's Clovis or Amarin or all these little guys that are getting bought out on one drug. These companies wouldn't be buying these companies out for huge premiums if they didn't think they could go out there and make money off these drugs. I think, you know, it's a politically tough environment, but I think at the end of the day, nobody believes it's really going to be changed all that much drastically. And, you know, look at it, names like Amgen. Amgen has just been raging for over a month now, you know, putting it up, I think it's a new all-time high here off of 188 all the way up to 235.
Yeah, rhetoric during the election trail it's a pretty big bridge to get to actual legislation. Mostly it's a bridge too far, right?
You know, it is. And even today, Gilead, you had, you know, Sanders and AOC out bashing Gilead for wanting to get their HIV drug to keep it to themselves. And they said this is immoral. This shouldn't be allowed. They're allowed to make money, guys. I mean, they're public companies. They're supposed to make money. Right. They have to make money by, you know, the drugs that work. They have to sell for a higher price, because how many drugs have we seen fail from all these companies over the last couple of years? And everybody kind of forgets that.
And everyone is hoping and wishing Biogen will be successful with this Alzheimer drug. And if it is, obviously the future for that company would be huge, because that is something with the baby boomers that are becoming more and more prevalent. So the guy who figures out the Alzheimer thing is going to obviously make a little fortune.
That would be incredible. You know, it's interesting, though. The stock's up from that study, but you read all the expert analysis, and they said the study wasn't good.
Right.
But there's so much hope for that, you said, for that drug and for that sector, that they'll buy anything until it's proven otherwise.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, in addition to the SPX, you did say something about that from time to time you have certain stocks that hit your radar, and you being a state trooper, anything on your radar?
I mean, one of the ones that I do watch all the time that we just talked about is USO. I've currently got a long position, positive delta position in USO. I like that for a number of reasons. One is with the IPO. I agree with your sentiment on that. Also, I just love it as a potential hedge too, I guess, too, for political events, at which case, you know, can kind of take a small little profit out of it and buy it back after things settle down. So that's one.
And you would say that $10 mark is a pretty pretty reasonable support.
Yeah, when this gets down below 10, I love the idea of just scooping up a little bit more and kind of playing the range and waiting for a pop.
I've always felt anything under 10 is like buying a long term option. You're betting the company won't go out of business and at some point will turn things around.
Yeah, and this you know, air quotes company is not going out of business. The way I tend to accumulate positions in USO is to wait until it gets down below that 10 level and then just sell some pretty much at the money puts.
With regards to the short interest, it's at almost 23% of the stock, which is, in my view, a high short interest.
Yeah.
Are people using this to hedge other things or something? Is that why the short interest is so high? And at some point, if they lifted those hedges, that would certainly certainly create some buying, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you get short interest like that, there is the potential of a short squeeze. If we get some real good pressure here in USO, we could end up seeing that. We could see a lot of follow through. We have the 21-day moving average, which crossed over the 50-day moving average almost a month ago now, and it's flirting right now with the 200-day moving average, and the stock itself busted through the 21-day moving average. So, I would not be surprised to see some follow through here. I'm not saying it's going at 15, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some follow through.
Yeah. And, again, the OPEC meeting seemed to indicate that they're going to be reducing the supply a bit to try to tighten up the supply-demand dynamic, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't be a negative for this thing either. All right. Well, as we come to the top of the hour here, Mike, was there anything specific, any particular market that or stock that you're looking at that you think could be a mover here this week?
I would continue to keep a close eye on Target. It likes to burn premium. It got put on, somebody put it on their best idea list for next year, is talking about how their online sales are really starting to take on Amazon. You see their stores are busy. They take out 128. They go into blue skies. You have Costco earnings this week. I kind of like the way this stock is acting. It's acting the best in that retail space. So if you're looking for an idea that's a kind of a safer play, I love Target. I like how this thing is moving and how it's acting the last two earnings reports.
And another factor there is evaluation. You know, it was down at 15-1 PE ratio, and everybody said that's way too low of a valuation. And I think when they made that decision, that's where you got the big pop as well, is when people said, hey, listen, 15-1 is way too cheap for this thing. It should be in the 20s for sure. And right now it's around 20. So, valuation expansion could also be a help.
Yeah, I think it could. And if the market goes, I think, again, they like these value plays and the IWM as well lately. I would continue to look there.
Yep. All right. Well, as we come to the top of the hour, we're going to reintroduce ourselves a little bit, Dan, to the people who aren't familiar with you. And if you have any special offers that you'd like to extend, this would be the time to do it. MarketTakerMentoring.com is for Dan. And Dan, you let us know.
I'd love to share with you anything I can. Anything that can help you become a better trader is exactly what I want to help provide. In fact, you can get a free report by simply going to markettaker.com/5. Those are 5 strategies for volatile markets. So that's market, like stock market, taker, as in take something, 2 T's in a row, markettaker.com/5.
And that's where they can get a free information?
Yeah. You can get a free report, 5 strategies for volatile markets. It's not like a 1,000-page report or anything. It's nice and short. Just kind of gives you some ideas, some best practices for different strategies to use under different situations, and it's yours.
Great. And as Dan had previously said, he's been doing this for a long time, on the floor, very experienced, so obviously checking out his information makes an awful lot of sense. Mike, with regards to smartoptiontrading.com, do you have anything you'd like to offer or extend to people now?
Yeah, you come in there. You can sign up for my regular service. It's $25 for the first month as a get-to-know-me period for the first 30 days. It turns to 100 thereafter. Live private Twitter feed. I do 2 videos a day, 1 with morning setups, 1 talking about what I liked the day, the day's action, what looks good going forward. I'm live for about 3.5 hours a day, and I'm always teaching, always teaching people how to trade, about options, what to do, and we do a weekly mentoring webinar every Thursday after the close of the market as well. So if you don't want to sign up yet, follow me at Options Mike on Twitter. I post a ton of stuff, including about 50 charts every Sunday that everybody can follow along with.
Okay, that's great. Again, both these guys have been in the business for quite a long time. They obviously are on top of this thing very much, and they both have different angles on how to approach the market and how to try to manage the risk of the market. So definitely suggest you take a look at their websites and see what they could do for you. Right now, we're at the top of the hour. I'm Jim Kenny. I'll be back with you again, and I'm going to turn it over to David. David, you're up.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get updates on new episodes and when the archives are posted. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows. Also, on timingresearch.com, you can get access to the latest Synergy Traders event that we had over the weekend. So Jim Kenny, Maria Villatoro, Barry Burns, Anka Metcalf, and Mark Sachs gave presentations on best year-end trading strategies. So if you just go to timingresearch.com and scroll down to the recent posts, you can find the Synergy Traders number 8 archive there. So be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to join us tomorrow for Analyze Your Trade, episode number 105. Jake Bernstein and Jim Kenny will be on for that one. And I just want to thank my guests again for today. Dan Passarelli of MarketTakerMentoring.com, Mike Cassani of SmartOptionTrading.com, and Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.